owing syllogism which does not reach consciousness, is completed in them. If it is possible to have this kind of an attack from such causes, I too may have this kind of an attack, for I have the same reasons. If this were a cycle capable of becoming conscious, it would perhaps express itself in fear of getting the same attack. But it takes place in another psychic sphere, and therefore ends in the realization of the dreaded symptom. Identification is therefore not a simple imitation, but a sympathy based upon the same etiological claim. It expresses an as though, and refers to some common quality which has remained in the unconscious. Identification is most often used in hysteria to express sexual community. An hysterical woman identifies herself most readily, although not exclusively, with persons with whom she has had sexual relations, or who have sexual intercourse with the same persons as herself. Language takes such a conception into consideration. Two lovers are one. In the hysterical fantasy, as well as in the dream, it is sufficient for the identification if one thinks of sexual relations, whether or not they become real. The patient then only follows the rules of the hysterical thought processes when she gives expression to her jealousy of her friend, which, moreover, she herself admits to be unjustified, in that she puts herself in her place and identifies herself with her by creating a symptom, the denied wish. I might further clarify the process specifically as follows. She puts herself in the place of her friend in the dream, because her friend has taken her own place in relation to her husband, and because she would like to take her friend's place in the esteem of her husband. The contradiction to my theory of dreams in the case of another female patient, the most witty among all my dreamers, was solved in a simpler manner, although according to the scheme that the non-fulfillment of one wish signifies the fulfillment of another. I had one day explained to her that the dream is a wish fulfillment. The next day she brought me a dream to the effect that she was travelling with her mother-in-law to their common summer resort. Now I knew that she had struggled violently against spending the summer in the neighbourhood of her mother-in-law. I also knew that she had luckily avoided her mother-in-law by renting an estate in a far distant country resort. Now the dream reversed this wished-for solution. Was not this in the flattest contradiction to my theory of wish-fulfillment in the dream? Certainly, it was only necessary to draw the inferences from this dream in order to get at its interpretation. According to this dream, I was in the wrong. It was thus her wish that I should be in the wrong, and this wish the dream showed her as fulfilled. But the wish that I should be in the wrong, which was fulfilled in the theme of the country home, referred to a more serious matter. At that time I had made up my mind, from the material furnished by her analysis, that something of significance for her illness must have occurred at a certain time in her life. She had denied it because it was not present in her memory. We soon came to see that I was in the right. Her wish that I should be in the wrong, which is transformed into the dream, thus corresponded to the justifiable wish that those things, which at the time had only been suspected, had never occurred at all. Without an analysis, and merely by means of an assumption, I took the liberty of interpreting a little occurrence in the case of a friend, who had been my colleague through the 8 classes of the gymnasium. He once heard a lecture of mine delivered to a small assemblage on the novel subject of the dream as the fulfillment of a wish. He went home, dreamt that he had lost all his suits, he was a lawyer, and then complained to me about it. I took refuge in the evasion, "One can't win all one's suits." But I thought to myself, if for 8 years I sat as primus on the first bench, while he moved around somewhere in the middle of the class, may he not naturally have had a wish from his boyhood days that I, too, might for once completely disgrace myself? In the same way, another dream of a more gloomy character was offered me by a female patient as a contradiction to my theory of the wish dream. The patient, a young girl, began as follows. "You remember that my sister has now only one boy, Charles. She lost the elder one, Otto, while I was still at her house. Otto was my favourite. It was I who really brought him up. I like the other little fellow too, but of course not nearly as much as the dead one. Now I dreamt last night that I saw Charles lying dead before me. He was lying in his little coffin, his hands folded. There were candles all about, and in short, it was just like the time of little Otto's death, which shocked me so profoundly. Now tell me, what does this mean? You know me. Am I really bad enough to wish my sister to lose the only child she has left? Or does the dream mean that I wish Charles to be dead rather than Otto, whom I like so much better?" I assured her that this interpretation was impossible. After some reflection, I was able to give her the interpretation of the dream, which I subsequently made her confirm. Having become an orphan at an early age, the girl had been brought up in the house of a much older sister, and had met among the friends and visitors who came to the house a man who made a lasting impression upon her heart. It looked for a time as though these barely expressed relations were to end in marriage, but this happy culmination was frustrated by the sister, whose motives have never found a complete explanation. After the break, the man who was loved by our patient avoided the house. She herself became independent some time after little Otto's death, to whom her affection had now turned. But she did not succeed in freeing herself from the inclination for her sister's friend in which she had become involved. Her pride commanded her to avoid him, but it was impossible for her to transfer her love to the other suitors who presented themselves in order. Whenever the man whom she loved, who was a member of the literary profession, announced a lecture anywhere, she was sure to be found in the audience. She also seized every other opportunity to see him from a distance unobserved by him. I remembered that on the day before she had told me that the professor was going to a certain concert, and that she was also going there in order to enjoy the sight of him. This was on the day of the dream, and the concert was to take place on the day on which she told me the dream. I could now easily see the correct interpretation, and I asked her whether she could think of any event which had happened after the death of little Otto. She answered immediately, "Certainly. At that time the professor returned after a long absence, and I saw him once more beside the coffin of little Otto." It was exactly as I had expected. I interpreted the dream in the following manner. If now the other boy were to die, the same thing would be repeated. You would spend the day with your sister, the professor would surely come in order to offer condolence, and you would see him again under the same circumstances as at that time. The dream signifies nothing but this wish of yours to see him again, against which you are fighting inwardly. I know that you are carrying the ticket for today's concert in your bag. Your dream is a dream of impatience. It has anticipated the meeting which is to take place today by several hours. In order to disguise her wish, she had obviously selected a situation in which wishes of that sort are commonly suppressed, a situation which is so filled with sorrow that love is not thought of. And yet, it is very easily probable that even